Welcome back to Whence Can You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 408. Welcome back to the program. I am officially back from Camp Masonry in Toledo, Ohio. I'll tell you, I had a wonderful time. I suppose some of you who read the Midnight Freemasons might have read just a few of the exploits that happened over the weekend. It was a great time. We had such great fellowship, and all of the education, the presentations, was really the reason to get down there and check it out. So, huge thanks goes out to Brother Jason Chammy for the hospitality and putting it all together. So, what's the next big Masonic convention to happen? Well, I'm fairly certain there's going to be a few little cons here and there. I don't know how wide they're pulling from. I don't know what kind of an audience they're looking for. But there are a couple that are out there. I think there's going to be one, an esoteric conference in California. And there's also something happening in Utah. And I don't know the full details. You'll have to Google those and check them out. But if you're looking for the next big Masonic con convention, then you're going to be checking out probably Ezekiel Bay's Attleboro, Massachusetts, which will be in April. We got a little ways. We got some time to save up, buy some airline tickets, all that good stuff. You can search them on Facebook, and you'll see that they're already ready to go. They have their dates up. So just plan on that. Tickets for that are usually $5 at the door, is what it's usually been. So you just got to get there. And, of course, MasonicCon Chicago. So MasonicCon Chicago is going to be a very awesome premier event. 3 days, 11 speakers. We'll have a festive board. We'll break for lunches and dinners, so you guys don't have to stick around and do those, but we'll have recommended joints to go to. And it's going to be a lot of fun. All-day events, probably going to 11 o'clock, midnight maybe, even on Saturday. Sunday, probably start around 10 o'clock. But what we're going to do here in a couple weeks is we'll send out the first speaker. We're going to span things out. We have approximately 58/57 weeks until the event. So in a couple weeks, we'll start releasing one piece of information at a time to the subscribers of the newsletter. So for instance, if I said Brother Joe Snow is going to show up, you would be the first to know that, and then a week later, we would go ahead and announce that to the general public. So you'll get your information faster and sooner. And we'll do that and probably release a speaker every couple weeks, some information on them, and some of their past projects. So this week, I've got two educational pieces for you. One is on how to be a better educator, and the other is a short blurb on esoteric masonry by Brother Hilton Kaufman, who's written some things for the Illinois Lodge of Research. And we'll get into those right after this. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Bankers Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Bankers Best Beard and Skin Care. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Bankers Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first grandmaster. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruart, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. All right, now both of the papers for this week actually come from volume number 8, number 1 of the Illinois Lodge of Research. I'm going to do this first one a little bit different than I normally do. I'm going to read this particular piece, and in it there are some cases that Brother Ed Rund is making. I may have commentary in between the pieces. You'll know it's commentary because I'll break away from the piece for a moment to talk about it. Some thoughts on the basics of Masonic education by Edward Rund, past director of Masonic Education, Grand Lodge of Illinois. Over the course of my Masonic years, I have acquired a growing realization that if a high moral standard of thought and behavior is the earthly goal, then Masonic education must be the primary means of attaining it. And although people learn by both intentional activities and incidental occurrences, the certainty, or at least the strong probability of making good progress on our spiritual temples must come from the planned, consciously reflective, hopeful, guided pursuit of moral knowledge. The many experiences that the quote-unquote active Mason encounters in observing and participating in degree work, as well as through the behavioral modeling that occurs during fraternal relations, provide only a partial or incomplete means of obtaining those truths that we seek. Certainly, learning occurs as a result of these encounters, and we do become better men, yet much is left to chance. Especially considering the growing pattern of irregular attendance seen in our lodges across the nation, I do believe that while the memorization of catechism and ritual does create new neural connections which can change the ways of thinking and acting, similar to those found in more formal learning environments, such memorization is not a fully adequate substitute for the latter. It must be remembered that while Freemasonry offers an integrated system of philosophy, paths in pursuit of truth, it is a system veiled in allegory, not to mention one which has been transmitted to us in 18th century language and conceptions. Without a process of interpretation, clarification, conscious awareness, I am learning, active reflection, this is how the information fits with what I already know, and the persistent intention to apply the new understandings, example, practice new behaviors until they become habit, we are deluding ourselves about the likelihood of Masonry helping brethren bring the building of their moral character to fruition. Given this foundation, how can we best ensure that a jurisdiction's Masonic education program will achieve the above stated imperatives? I believe it is necessary to first have three critical conditions present. Now, before we dive into those three things that he's talking about, this was written back in 1996, over 20 years ago. And for everybody out there who might say, you know, we have never gotten it, or nobody of any significance has ever gotten it, you know, what I'm really realizing here is that whoever the education chiefs are in our states are usually guys who do get it, as long as they're not part of the quote-unquote administration, because it's really like administration versus education, and that's what it always seems to be. And the people who are in education with no ties to administration understand the concept and the need for this stuff. So I rather enjoyed those first three paragraphs. Let's go on and let's hear about his three critical conditions that must be present. One, a genuine commitment to Masonic education and its financial support from the Grand Master of his officers. Okay, well, here in Illinois, we only had like a couple $1,000s for education. Meanwhile, membership had like $15,000 or something. So, go figure. Number two, a realistic, workable system, methods and resources for planning and implementation of the various elements of the program. So you got to have something laid out. You have to have the resources to lay it out and to plan through it and to actually make it happen. And number three, an ongoing commitment to the educational activities by all parties concerned so that continuity over time is established. What does that mean? Well, that means every Grand Master has to sign on to this. It means every Grand Line officer has to say yes. Yes to education. Yes. So it really does just mean this dedication. Without going too far off topic and getting, and I want to get back to the paper here, but it probably does need to be said that if we focus on education, that's the one thing that will continually bring men back to the lodge. It's the constant that we do offer that's part of the system without jumping out into charities and social activities. This is the return on your investment. And if you don't focus on that, we're just kind of giving lip service and then getting guys in and not providing it. We're like lying almost. Ed goes on. Given the presence of these conditions, there are three essential components to providing the membership with consistent high-quality Masonic education. Design. It is necessary for the State Education Committee to establish one or more teams to either carry out the design and development of educational programs and supporting materials, examples would be video, audio, and print media, or to select existing programs and materials from other jurisdictions. This process must be supported by both proper policy and financing if a serious and effective educational campaign is to be maintained. Delivery. As with any educational process, instructors or mentors must be properly trained, monitored, and evaluated. The best program design possible will go for naught when delivered by unqualified, although motivated instructors. Men teaching at the district and lodge levels need to be properly selected and trained for presenting material to an adult population that has grown up with the sophistication of television, the computer, and multimedia presentations. Current adult learning experiences tell us, for example, that these participants are unlikely to be attentive for more than 15 to 30 minutes to material presented by straight lecture methods. Administration. An organization structure needs to be established that will support the delivery of educational programming. The focal person being the lodge education officer. Support is essential from both the lodge and district levels. Properly trained, the district deputy can provide the administrative support from his level, although a trained district education officer can generate the leadership spark necessary to bring the program to life. If that position is not established, it becomes critical to create an area education officer who can bridge the gap between the Grand Lodge Education Committee and the local lodge levels. Without these points of administrative support, the delivery of education in the lodge is left to chance, the chance that the LEO will have the ability, motivation, and resources to overcome the natural lethargy, indifference, and lack of support that seems so prevalent today in many of the fellows of our craft. Finally, consideration should be given to the degree of intensity of Masonic education, which is appropriate to the audience, time, and circumstances. What is the current level of Masonic knowledge? Are they newly made, entry-level, or seasoned, advanced-level Masons? What is the depth of their interest or commitment to education? What length of time is available for delivery? These considerations suggest a threefold approach to Masonic education. 1. Brief time, minimal intensity, after meeting, short talks, and after dinner presentations. 2. medium time and intensity, lodge and district education programs up to 1 or 2 hours in length, and 3, longer time, greater intensity, formal education courses, especially beneficial for officers and newly made Masons, delivered through group participation or individual correspondence. Given the conditions, components, and considerations described above, a grand jurisdiction will have traveled a long way toward ensuring that its membership will not only be Masons in their hearts, but also in their behavior, and with the knowledge to both exemplify it and enthuse others. Brother Ed Rund. Well, there you have that. I just can't offer too much in the way of commentary because I really enjoy it. I think it's absolutely on point. If anything, if I have one piece of criticism, it's that maybe there could be a slight added poke toward the philosophic or esoteric in Freemasonry. But again, that was written in 1996 at one of the lowest points in any kind of spiritual or philosophic means in Freemasonry.
George Washington, Alexandria Lodge 22, and James Monroe, Williamsburg Lodge 6, both in Virginia, were the only two United States presidents elected essentially without opposition. In 1820, all members of the Electoral College were obligated to cast a vote for Monroe, but New Hampshire Representative William Plummer instead voted for John Quincy Adams. A popular story is that Plummer cast the renegade vote against Monroe because he felt no president except Washington should garner a unanimous vote in the Electoral College. While this is a nice sentiment, it's probably not true. Plummer, simply, was not a supporter of Monroe. More than that, however, Plummer was also charged to vote for Brother Monroe's vice presidential candidate. Monroe's pick for vice president was Daniel Tompkins, a member of Hiram Lodge 72, Mount Pleasant, New York, who later served as that state's Grand Master. Plummer detested Tompkins, describing him as grossly intemperate and having not that weight of character which his office requires. Historians agree it is more likely it was Monroe's association with Brother Tompkins rather than Plummer's admiration of Washington that cost Monroe a unanimous election. But there is actually more to the story. Plummer was not a Freemason. The man for whom he voted, John Quincy Adams, was one of American history's most ardent anti-Masons. His strong views opposing the craft are well known and well documented. Many histories of the era overlook the fact that Plummer, instead of voting for Tompkins, cast his vice presidential vote for former U.S. Attorney General Richard Rush. Rush was initiated in Philadelphia's Union Lodge 121 on September 19, 1811. He remained an entered apprentice, attended only one meeting, resigned from the craft, and like Adams, became a vehement anti-Mason. To recap, Plummer, a non-Mason, voted for Adams and Rush, two strident anti-Masons, in opposition to two Freemasons, Monroe and Tompkins. It's hard to believe, isn't it, that didn't have something to do with Plummer's actions in what may have been one of the first shots across the bow in the then-coming anti-Masonic period. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, now our second piece is called Esoteric Masonry by Hilton Kaufman, Past Master, page 44, the Illinois Lodge of Research, volume number 21. And it reads, while many Masons do not get involved with esoteric ideas and may even consider some of the concepts along that line to be nonsense, since at least 1737 there has been an association between Masonry and the esoteric. We do use allegory and symbols in our degree work. Perhaps there is some deep meaning to be found in the degrees. Exploring hidden meanings in masonry may aid a brother in finding the deeper meanings of his life. Personally, I prefer to keep most of my esoteric studies, such as astrology and Kabbalah, separate from my involvement with masonry. Even so, it is possible to look at some of the esoteric ideas and concepts often considered to be associated with masonry. One should be careful, as many of the strongest proponents of esoteric masonry are involved with bodies which are considered irregular and clandestine. Much of the available information also seems to come from anti-Masonic organizations. We exist to make good men better. The study of alchemy seems to include turning lead into gold. We certainly do not have any knowledge to change the actual metal of lead into that of gold. That was not really what many alchemists were trying to do. The idea was to metaphorically refine oneself from lead-like state to a more golden one. Through Masonic teachings, we aid the initiate to better understand himself so as to strive to a better man who is metaphorically gold. Why is the candidate expected to wear a special garment rather than his own clothing for the initiation ceremony? In Illinois ritual, the secretary explains before the candidate even enters the main room of the lodge that this symbolizes the lack of merit in his earthly achievements. It might be said to be the start of a breaking down of one's ego before the main ritual takes place, so that the lessons of the degree can be accepted. Several things occur which impress the importance of a belief in a deity upon the candidate. The candidate is asked to affirm his belief, take an oath on a volume of sacred law, and listen to various prayers. He is not asked to believe in any specific religion, but to have a religion to guide him. There is a vow of secrecy. We are taught to be circumspect in our dealings with others. It is not clear just what secrets we are to keep. Generally, we do not freely discuss the means of recognition or the experience of the initiation ceremonies with outsiders. There are some matters discussed in lodge that are no business of others. I doubt that the secrecy goes much further than that. In a similar manner, one can look at much of what occurs during the initiatory degrees and seek deeper meaning. Perhaps something can be found if one thinks about what happens or is said. Much of the lectures that are delivered as explanation can be described as allegorical. There probably is hidden meaning behind many of the concepts that are mentioned. These concepts can be explored by one who has the inclination to do so. Perhaps these allude to the ideas that were obvious to the authors of the ritual, but are more difficult to understand today. They might make sense to one who thinks about them. Another area of esoteric study involves something known as the ancient mysteries. Some moral and religious ideas are said to go way back into time, to ancient Egypt and beyond. There is a line of thought that these ideas are now found in Masonry. There are various theories as to how these ideas came into Masonry. One is that certain adepts hid within the ranks of Masonic lodges as they were forming. Another is that some of the Knights Templar became stonemasons in Scotland and brought knowledge that was obtained in the Holy Land into the lodges with them. Still, another is that the natural truth can be found by any intelligent person who seeks it. The Hiramic legend in the third degree is said to come from these mysteries as it deals with the idea of death and rebirth. The treatment and meaning is different, but outwardly they are similar. One involves a sort of religious rebirth, while the other seems to involve magical restoration. One interpretation is that this similarity is only a surface appearance, while the real lesson might relate to something like loyalty and remaining true to one's vows, even in the face of death. If you are interested in a possible relation, a book entitled The Lost Keys of Freemasonry by Manly P. Hall might be a good place to start. While other books relating the ancient mysteries to Masonry have been written and published, this one is probably the most easily available. It has been reprinted many times and is usually stocked by Masonic suppliers and booksellers. It's also available online. Many of the ritual elements of Masonry can be found in some form as a part of initiation rites in many different cultures. It is unlikely that they come from some common source, as these cultures often have no significant knowledge of others. Perhaps these are common ideas found by all mankind. Perhaps authors borrowed ideas to form the lodge rituals. Still, another way to explore esoteric masonry concepts is through some of the appendant bodies, such as the Scottish and York Rites. The degrees in these rites teach moral lessons which are veiled in allegory. If the esoteric aspects of Masonry are of interest to you, enjoy your studies and have fun. You may improve yourself with what you learn. However, take care with what you seem to learn. Sometimes one can go overboard with a small point. For example, astrology can be related to a sentence or two in the Master's Middle Chamber Lecture of the Second Degree. This may be far-fetched, but still related. Probably, the passage is more concerned with astronomy or cosmology than attempting to get meaning through astrological techniques. When studying Masonic esoterica, one should be careful to examine the implications of what is said. Some ideas are expressions of deep truth, while others are nonsense. You must judge for yourself. That's it. Kind of just a quick little primer on esoteric Masonry. You know, I feel like maybe that's regressive for this program. We've kind of moved into the realm of talking more deeply about things. But he brings up a great point, and that's something that I mentioned in the second quantum lecture, the Tetragrammaton, where I say that one should be very careful when we dive into these topics, right? Because we cannot get carried away. Whether you believe full bore what we're talking about, or whether you just loosely subscribe to it, one should keep one foot on the ground at all times. So that's it for this week. I want to thank everybody for listening. If you want to know where I'm going to be next, well, I just wrapped a lecture at Oriental Lodge number 33 in Chicago this past week, so if you came out to that, thank you so much, and I really appreciate it. The next place that I will be presenting is September. So September 21st, I'll be at Lodge of the Nine Sisters, number 773 in Raleigh, North Carolina. And it's a newer lodge. We're going to be out there. I'm going to also say that I think John Ruark is going to be there with me presenting a topic. So if he says yes to the dress, then he'll be there with me, and he'll do an esoteric presentation along with myself, and I think we're going to do something that's complimentary. It's also a great time if you want to pick up a couple copies of the It's Business Time book that John and I wrote. We'll both be there, and we can sign copies of that if you're interested. Just want to go ahead and, as always, invite everybody out there to check out MidnightFreemasons.org for three new Masonic articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Go ahead and just subscribe. Put your name in there, and you'll get them emailed to you every week. You won't miss them. And that's it. Until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.